A Nobel Prize winner who played bongo drums in strip clubs. A physicist who picked locks at Los Alamos during the Manhattan Project. A professor who turned down prestigious awards because he despised ceremony. Richard Feynman embodied a radical truth. Brilliance doesn't emerge from following the crowd. It flourishes when you stop caring what others think. This memoir isn't a conventional autobiography. It's a manifesto for intellectual independence, woven through intimate stories of love, loss, and the relentless pursuit of understanding. From childhood walks in the woods to investigating the Challenger disaster, Feynman demonstrates that the most profound insights come not from memorizing facts, but from asking uncomfortable questions. His life challenges our deepest assumptions about success, knowledge, and what it means to live authentically in a world obsessed with conformity. Real learning begins with a crucial distinction: knowing the name of something versus understanding how it works. During childhood walks, Feynman's father wouldn't just identify birds, he'd explain their place in nature's web. You can know the name of that bird in every language, and when you're finished, you'll know nothing about the bird. You'll only know about humans in different places and what they call the bird. His father demonstrated inertia using a wagon and a ball, then admitted something revolutionary. Nobody knows why it's true. That honesty about the limits of knowledge sparked a lifelong fascination. While other children learned to accept answers, Feynman learned that the deepest questions remain unanswered. His father also taught him to see through social hierarchies. Those men in big hats faced the same fundamental problems as everyone else. Childhood friend Bernie Walker revealed that thinking could be visual, not just verbal self-talk. In college, Feynman discovered he could count seconds while writing or reading, but not while talking aloud. When colleague John Tukey claimed he could talk while counting, their tests revealed fundamentally different mental processes. Feynman talked numbers internally, while Tukey visualized a tape. This demonstrated something profound. People's mental processes can be radically different, even when performing identical tasks. When working on quantum mechanics, Feynman developed visual methods for understanding particle interactions, while most physicists relied on equations. Neither approach was superior. They were simply different pathways to the same destination.
She was the most popular girl around. He was painfully shy. Yet when Arlene noticed him at a party, everything shifted. Feynman joined the Temple Youth Center's art group just to be near her, discovering her apparent boyfriend Jerome wasn't actually dating her. Their relationship deepened through intellectual honesty. When Arlene needed philosophy homework help, Feynman showed her that questioning Descartes wasn't sacrilege, it was thinking. He used a Mobius trick to disprove her teacher's claim that everything has two sides, teaching her to challenge assumed truths. Arlene was extraordinary, newspaper editor, pianist, talented artist. She taught him sensitivity to others' feelings. He convinced her of complete honesty between them. Most significantly, he shared his philosophy. What do you care what other people think? This became their mantra, a declaration of independence from social pressure. They promised to marry after MIT, but when Arlene developed a mysterious neck lump, their commitment to honesty faced its first test. Despite his family's pressure to lie about her tuberculosis diagnosis, Feynman told the truth. Her response revealed everything. Rather than focusing on her mortality, she worried about him. They must have put you through hell. They married at City Hall with borrowed witnesses, crossing Staten Island by ferry. While Feynman worked on the Manhattan Project at Princeton, Arlene stayed at Deborah Hospital. He visited every weekend, sometimes sleeping in train stations. His parents objected. His father feared career derailment. His mother feared tuberculosis. But they were already married emotionally. The ceremony merely formalized what existed. Arlene's playful spirit persisted despite deteriorating health. She sent pencils inscribed, "Richard, darling, I love you, Putzie," and challenged his social anxiety. What do you care what other people think? She made him cook steaks on the hospital lawn and sent formal Christmas cards signed Dr. and Mrs. R.P. Feynman to colleagues. In her final hours, Feynman felt something unexpected. Not delighted, but not terribly upset either. They had known this was coming. The difference between them and others was merely quantitative, 5 years together instead of 50. They refused to make themselves miserable asking why. After she passed, he noticed her hair still smelled the same. Something enormous had happened, yet nothing had changed. This paradox, death's finality, alongside its strange ordinariness, would influence his thinking about mortality forever. Their relationship proved you can care deeply while remaining independent in your thinking. When Challenger exploded 73 seconds after launch, killing all seven crew members, Fineman joined the Presidential Commission investigating the disaster. Unlike other commissioners following official tours, he sought out engineers actually working on the rockets. At Kennedy Space Center, he discovered technicians using pry bars and sledgehammers to fit booster sections together, hardly the precision assembly he expected. Metal shavings were embedded in putty meant to protect critical O-ring seals. These frontline workers had insights that weren't reaching management. The most alarming discovery, Thiokol engineers had recommended against launching in cold weather, but were pressured to reverse their position. When Fineman identified their four best SEAL experts, the top two confirmed they had opposed the launch, contradicting management's claim that opinion had been evenly divided. Rather than wait for NASA's bureaucratic response, Fineman devised a simple experiment. During a commission meeting, he placed compressed O-ring rubber in ice water. When released, it didn't spring back, proving it had no resilience at freezing temperatures. This simple demonstration revealed what elaborate NASA testing had obscured. He also discovered engineers estimated engine failure probability around 1 in 200, but management claimed 1 in 100,000, a thousandfold difference. NASA had developed a culture where bad news couldn't flow upward and schedule pressure trumped safety concerns. Science offers three essential values: technological capability, intellectual enjoyment, and most crucially, experience with ignorance and doubt. As scientists, we understand that all knowledge exists on a spectrum of certainty, none absolute. This freedom to doubt represents our responsibility to society. Consider our bodies. The phosphorus in our brain is replaced every 2 weeks, meaning our consciousness resides in atoms that were last week's potatoes. Our individuality is merely a pattern of constantly replacing atoms. Yet few non-scientists experience this wonder, perhaps because one must know how to read the music of science. Science reveals the physical world's apparent meaninglessness. It doesn't teach good and bad. Throughout history, conflicting answers about life's meaning have created monstrosities from false beliefs. We must frankly admit, we do not know life's meaning. Yet in this admission, we find the philosophy that birthed democracy and human progress. This perspective informed Fineman's Challenger investigation. When NASA claimed the shuttle had a 1 in 100,000 chance of failure, he recognized dangerous denial of uncertainty. His conclusion? For a successful technology, reality must take precedence over public relations, for nature cannot be fooled. Fineman's life poses an uncomfortable challenge. What would you pursue if you stopped caring what others think? When Arlene challenged him about cutting inscriptions off pencils, when he broke from commission procedures to speak with engineers, when he developed visual methods while others relied on equations, each choice required independence from social pressure. This philosophy isn't about being contrarian. It's about recognizing that progress requires freedom from consensus. Good science demands both independence from groupthink and responsiveness to evidence. When Fineman demonstrated the O-ring's failure in cold temperatures, he made complexity understandable to everyone. By understanding how different minds work, he developed multiple approaches to scientific challenges, switching mental pathways when one hit a dead end. The deepest application comes in facing mortality. When Arlene was dying, they refused to make themselves miserable asking why. Instead, they focused on enjoying their remaining time together. In the face of death, what others think matters even less. What remains is the authentic experience of being alive, of loving, of wondering about this remarkable universe. Feynman's legacy isn't just his contributions to physics, it's his demonstration that brilliance emerges when you stop performing for others and start pursuing what genuinely fascinates you. The question is, what do you care what other people think?